Different ways of informal witnessing. The Russian-speaking brothers were bold and zealous preachers and did not hesitate to talk to people in informal settings. For example, they would start conversations with tourists who were visiting churches in Tallinn and witness to them. Often tourists thought that a person who talked about the Bible was a tour guide, so they paid rapt attention to what the brothers said. Some sisters preached on trains. They would buy a round-trip train ticket between Tartu and Tallinn. The 8-hour journey gave them plenty of time to start conversations and share the good news with passengers. "I prayed for a Bible study," recounts Maria Pasechnik, who had moved to Estonia from Kazakhstan. After some thought, she decided to preach to the people who, with her, waited for hours in long lines to buy food at the local shops. "One day, while standing in line," continues Maria, "I began a discussion with a woman and gradually directed the conversation toward the Bible. The woman herself did not happen to be very interested, but she took me to her acquaintances, introduced me to them, and then left me to continue the discussion with them. As a result, I was able to start 4 Bible studies. One of the women became a baptized witness and is still serving Jehovah faithfully." As is true everywhere, many of Jehovah's servants stood out as exemplary at their places of employment. For example, the Communist Party organizer at a power station suggested that Leonhard Nilsk was not needed at the company any longer because of being a religious person. However, the head of the electrical laboratory spoke up and said, "Do we need the communists who drink and don't fulfill their tasks more than we need a religious person who is known to be trustworthy?" Leonhard's other workmates also defended him because of his good reputation, and the matter was dropped. Apparently, the party organizer was trying to curry favor with superior party officials, and when communist rule came to an end in Estonia, the party organizer herself lost her job. Giving a witness under ban. "When I was at school," recalls Lembit Riley, who now serves on the Estonia Branch Committee, "I spoke cautiously to many of my classmates. I used to invite one of the boys to my place, and I would discreetly preach to him. After I finished school, I didn't see him for about 20 years. Recently, I was delivering a public talk at the congregation in my hometown, and guess who was in the audience? It was my schoolmate. He had been studying with Jehovah's Witnesses, and shortly after my visit, he was baptized. What a joy that was for me." Because our work was banned, the brothers needed to be alert when witnessing. One elder explains how they did it. "We had to take the time to observe what kind of people were around us and with whom we could safely start a conversation. We had to be very discreet when speaking to strangers. After a while, we could often discern when someone was a KGB informant. Also, if someone was very talkative or loud, we would be suspicious. On the other hand, it might be safe to speak to someone who was reserved. We often started conversations with those who did not support the communist government, the so-called dissidents, who tended to be more open-minded." An encouraging visit in a park. The governing body arranged for one of its members, Lloyd Berry, along with Viv Moritz from the Finland branch, to meet Adolf Kose, who was organizing the work in Estonia. They met in a park in Leningrad, now St. Petersburg. "At first, Brother Kose was hesitant to speak," says Brother Moritz about their clandestine meeting, "and he cautiously remained behind his newspaper. But as the discussion progressed, the newspaper came down, and Adolf started to open up. He declined an invitation to have a meal with us," recalled Brother Berry. "He said it was better just to attend to necessary matters and leave it at that." When Brother Kose expressed concern about the heavy yoke of persecution and the restrictions on the witnesses in the Soviet Union, Brothers Moritz and Berry shared many encouraging thoughts with him. "In other countries, we have tests too," they pointed out. "Those tests seem easier, but they are more dangerous. We have many temptations that you do not have, and we are losing more people in the West than you are here." This visit was most timely and spiritually strengthening for Brother Kose. Only later did he learn that he had been talking to a member of the governing body, and he gladly conveyed the encouragement from Jehovah's organization to all those who were maintaining integrity under tyrannical oppression. "Our hearts go out to our brothers in the Soviet Union," wrote Brother Barry afterward. "It was a delight to meet Brother Kosei, and the handshake and bear hug that he gave us as we parted were a fitting conclusion to a most delightful meeting." Youths take a courageous stand at school. Young servants of Jehovah, in particular, came under pressure to support political organizations. They were also urged to engage in other activities that went against their Bible-trained conscience. "One day when I was a little girl at school," remembers Esther Tom, "everyone in the class was told to stand up, step forward, and sign a letter sending birthday greetings to the dictator, Joseph Stalin." Esther stood up, but refused to go forward. Instead, she politely said that she was not going to sign the letter. The teacher was angry, but surprisingly, some of the other students supported Esther and courageously said that they too were not going to sign the letter. As a result, the matter was dropped. Another issue involved wearing a red kerchief in support of communism. Those who refused to do so were threatened with lower grades or other forms of punishment. Our young brothers and sisters refused to compromise, manifesting the same loyal spirit as Daniel and his three Hebrew companions displayed in ancient Babylon. A whole new era. The fact that only 7% of the people belonged to the Communist Party indicates that the Estonian people in general did not support the Soviet system. Estonian officials were not always eager to follow directions from Moscow, and some of them even helped the witnesses. For example, in 1985, a local official came to Lembit Tome and advised, "I know you are a kind of foreman among the witnesses. When you get together for your meetings, do not do it on state holidays." "Well, I'll pass that information along," said Lembit. It evidently offended the KGB that the witnesses used state holidays for their meetings. Apparently, the brothers had been gathering too openly, so they made some adjustments in response to the friendly advice. A whole new era began in 1986 when the Soviet Union introduced its policy of perestroika, or restructuring. The governing body encouraged the brothers to use the new openness and freedom to arrange conventions in Eastern Europe. For our brothers in the Soviet Union, it was hard to believe that freedom could come before Armageddon. All that they had suffered was still fresh in their minds, and home searches continued to be a regular threat. Invited to address the public. With increased freedom, a growing number of people were showing an interest in religion and the Bible. Members of the public were curious about the stand taken by Jehovah's Witnesses, and various institutions invited brothers to give public discourses on our beliefs. One such occasion came as quite a surprise. Lembit Riley agreed to give a discourse to a group of people. When the day arrived, Einar Oyerand, who had made the arrangements, was listening to the radio as he was shaving, when he heard the announcement, "Today in Sakala Center there will be a speech entitled, What Does the Bible Teach?" Sakala Center was the main conference center in Tallinn, where the Communist Party usually held their meetings. Einar almost dropped his shaver. But he had no way of letting Lembit know that this was going to be a far bigger meeting than they had thought, not until they met at the bus stop. "The hall was packed," recalls Lembit. "I had never spoken to such a big audience. I had never used a microphone, nor had I spoken from a rostrum. After a short prayer, I thought about Paul at the Areopagus and thought of an introduction. As most in the audience were vegetarians, I began my talk by explaining that God gave the first humans only fruit and vegetables to eat. Only after the deluge were they allowed to eat meat." That introduction seemed to have a good effect on the audience, and a number of people lined up afterward to leave their name and address so that they could receive literature when it was available. Over the years, many brothers gave talks to large audiences in libraries, schools, and cultural centers. As a result, many righteously disposed people recognized and accepted the truth. Staying spiritually awake. In 1989, Jehovah's servants in the Soviet Union started to experience greater religious freedom, allowing some brothers to travel to a convention in Poland. What did it feel like to assemble in freedom after years of tyrannical repression? "We were so happy," recalls Ella Tome. "We cried so much. To us, this convention was really a spiritual paradise. We arrived in Poland early, so we were taken to a meeting in a kingdom hall," recounts another sister. "When I saw the brothers and sisters going into the hall, I started to cry. That was the first time I had ever been in a kingdom hall." That year, Theodore Jarrus and Milton Henschel of the governing body, along with Vili Pohl from the Germany branch, traveled throughout the Soviet Union. They were interested in meeting with the brothers to encourage them and to get acquainted with the situation. The scene of the world was changing quickly, and no time was to be lost in making use of the Soviet Union's policy of perestroika. This was a time for spiritual reorganizing, giving attention first to the translation work. Since 1983, Tomas Tom Edur, an energetic former hockey league player with an Estonian background, had been doing some translation into Estonian at the Canada branch. At that time, those publications were made available primarily to Estonians living abroad. But in 1990, with the work beginning to open up in Estonia, Tomas and his wife Elizabeth were assigned to the Finland branch to help translate our literature into Estonian. Soon after that, they were transferred to Estonia. Prior to this, individual translators had been working at separate locations. It was now evident that a translation team would benefit from working together at one location. Consequently, a number of translators began working at Lembit Tome's home in Tartu. However, because it was virtually impossible to obtain computers in the Soviet Union, the translators lacked equipment to do the work efficiently. The situation improved, though, when a local brother visited the United States branch and brought back two computers, a good start for an efficient translation department. Only a few of the translators had experience with computers and the organization's multi-language electronic photo typesetting system, or MEPS, so the task was challenging. But they were eager to learn and were soon doing excellent work.